Here there is only mental light, light and more light. Chapter 28. The reciprocal mental copies of the spiritual and the physical worlds. The being's spiritual structure and thinking are not accessible to its physical senses. These two phenomena could therefore be neither seen nor observed on the physical plane if the being were not equipped with a physical organism with which it could give its thinking form in purely physical matter, thereby making its formation of images visible to physical senses. The physical organism is thus in itself only an extension organ for the creation of mental images. When we see buildings, houses, machines, tools, means of transport and so on, they constitute, as I have mentioned previously, only copies of their originators in their mental images produced in physical matter. If they did not exist first in this way, their appearance on the physical plane would have been an absolute impossibility. Through the physical organism, the living beings thus acquire the ability to copy in physical matter their mental images that appear on the spiritual plane. It is thereby established as fact that the details of the physical world are out and out copies of the spiritual world's details, image formations, shapes, colors and sounds. But as the living being, through its physical organism, can also sense the mental constructions and image formations of its fellow beings copied or revealed in physical matter, these thus also become mental images in the consciousness of this being. Through this, the spiritual world to a certain degree will also come to consist of copies of created physical phenomena or mental constructions experienced through physical sensory perception. Chapter 29. The living being's consciousness and mental images. As previously mentioned, the living being builds up its consciousness from the experiences it acquires through its physical sensory perception. These experiences are transferred through the being's physical senses to its spiritual structure and here become spiritual mental images. Such spiritual mental images comprise the being's consciousness. By virtue of these mental images, which constitute experiences and knowledge, the being can in turn form new mental images that can be experienced not only on the spiritual plane but can also be transferred, through the physical organism, to the physical plane and here be fashioned in physical matter as pure image formation or in writing and speech, in sound and color. Thus a being's consciousness consists partly of image formations that are copies of its outer surroundings, and partly of image formations that are its own original ones. The being expresses its consciousness through these original mental constructions and the thought form copies of the mental images from the physical world, just as they also form the basis for the being's view of life and its ensuing moral perception, desire, exercise of will, sympathies and antipathies. Chapter 30. The living being's two sensory horizons, the physical and the spiritual. As we have already learnt, the living being has two sensory horizons, a spiritual one and a physical one. While the spiritual horizon is permanent, the physical is only periodic, since the physical body, which is a created phenomenon and is therefore like all other created phenomena, must perish. The being has therefore periods in its experience of life during which it experiences and creates with its spiritual senses alone. These periods begin at the being's liberation from its physical organism at so-called death, and continue until the being is again ready to connect with a new physical organism. During this period the being cannot experience anything directly on the physical plane of existence. It is thus, in reality, completely disappeared from this plane. There remains only the discarded physical organism, which quickly begins to decompose. And since beings are still very imperfect as regards sensing cosmically, and are, indeed, unconscious on the cosmic plane, they can judge only on the basis of what they physically witness. Many believe therefore, as previously mentioned, that the living being stands and falls with its physical organism, and that the being in question, whose physical organism has become a corpse, has completely ceased to exist. Chapter 31. Whether curses upon sin set forth in the Bible occur and where they do not occur. Here we have seen that the being, by virtue of its spiritual and eternal structure, exists just as much after death as it existed before it was born. That it can now no longer experience or create on the physical plane does not mean that it cannot experience or create on the spiritual plane. It can simply no longer transfer its thoughts or mental images directly to the physical plane, and it can no longer experience the thoughts or mental images manifested on the physical plane or in physical matter directly either. This has, however, liberated it from the considerable burden of having to juggle with an organism made of a substance that is thousands of times more concentrated, and thereby correspondingly heavier, than spiritual substance. Hear the biblical curse: in the sweat of thy brow, thou shalt eat thy bread, and the other curses upon sin come to pass. Hear the woman shall give birth to her children in pain. Hear the serpent must be fought, the serpent whose head shall be crushed by the seed or offspring of the woman, while the serpent shall crush the heel of the human being. Hear errors and their unpleasant effects, wars, illnesses and sufferings, are manifested. Here, as previously mentioned, the culmination of the dark contrast has its abode. These things cannot happen on the spiritual plane. There the light contrast is manifested. There we are in the home of all culminating happiness and bliss. There no one has to work in the sweat of his brow in order to maintain his existence. And there, painful childbirth is a thing of the past. There, in that wonderful spiritual world, matter automatically obeys the being's thoughts, wishes and will. It needs only to think of a thing and it happens, it needs only to give an order and it appears. Thought thus automatically obeys the being's wish and will or the impulses of energy that it sends out. And since the being learns to think logically during its physical existence, its manifestations of thought on the spiritual plane will thus be logical or illogical, perfect or imperfect according to the degree of perfection that it has acquired in its previous physical terrestrial lives. Chapter 32. Purgatory is an epoch of preparation for the experience of paradise. The basis for the being's life on the spiritual plane of existence after death is thus its absolute dream, that is, its longing to experience the highest ideal existence it can imagine. And the experience of this ideal existence or dream constitutes the living being's absolute, true paradise. But before the being can experience this ideal existence or enter this paradise after death and experience it visibly manifested here, it must go through the process of death, and possibly purgatory. As previously mentioned, purgatory is simply an epoch of preparation during which the senses through which the being experiences disappointments, sorrows, problems, bitterness, anger and hatred are put out of action. After this, the being can sense only light and joyous kinds of thought. Thus it cannot cause mental short circuits or short circuits of consciousness with other beings' kinds of thoughts or behavior, and it can now get on to the same wavelength as only beings in the same condition or the same paradise. The wavelength range of the being's consciousness will thus lie above all wavelength ranges of consciousness that can create animosity, antipathy, anger, jealousy, envy, sorrows, loss and disappointments. As its senses in paradise cannot register these kinds of thoughts or related ones, paradise can thus be nothing but a culminatory experience of sheer happiness and joy. If the opposite were the case, it would never experience a pure paradise or dream existence. The spiritual world would be just as characterized by war, accidents, sufferings, sorrows and problems as the physical world is. We must thus understand that the spiritual world constitutes a wavelength range that is far beyond the wavelength range of the physical world. The wavelength range of the former world is that of love and wisdom, while the wavelength range of the physical world is that of hatred and anger. This will perhaps be easier to understand when one becomes familiar with the fact that the spiritual world is actually a purely electrical world, indeed, is the very home of electricity. According to cosmic analyzers, electricity is the life force of the entire universe, it is the spirit of God Himself. But in the spiritual world, where this spirit or life force does not have to penetrate any physical matter and cannot therefore be used by the being here in the fields that it has not fully developed, the many short circuits in the form of the above mentioned kinds of thought, animosity, antipathy, anger and so on, cannot possibly occur. They constitute animal material of consciousness and become therefore increasingly unsuitable as material of consciousness for the living being, the more it grows and develops in the humane or human direction. The unfinished human being has thus two areas of consciousness: the animal area, which is its innate inheritance from its purely animal state, and its incipient human area, which grows or develops through the many short circuits that are generated between these two areas in its psyche or mentality. As these short circuits have in turn an influence on the being's physical behavior, they sometimes also cause this to short circuit with the behavior of its fellow beings, and war breaks out and spreads to the beings. And unhappy fates occur, with massacres and mutilation and the sorrows and problems connected with these, which can even end in suicide. In purgatory, the being is liberated from its ability to create and experience these unhappy states, through the set of senses involved being put out of action. Through this, the being is guaranteed that its spiritual existence between its physical lives, its paradise, becomes an experience of 100% mental light, a state of joy and happiness that it, as an unfinished human being, cannot possibly experience in its purest form on the physical plane of existence. With the liberation from its physical organism and its ensuing passage through purgatory, where it, as previously mentioned, has a certain part of its sensory range put out of action, its ability to experience life and create becomes considerably reduced. But the area of its consciousness from which it is liberated in paradise is its entire physical sphere of fate, where it had the opportunity to make mistakes and thereby bring misfortune and adversity upon itself, and to be burdened with the problems, troubles and sufferings that ensue from this. The being has thus been liberated from its entire unfinished field of consciousness, which can be finished or completed absolutely only on the physical plane. After this, its consciousness will contain only those fields whose evolution is finished or completed to such an extent that it, through these, can experience and create nothing but light and joy for others as well as for itself. Chapter 33, where reincarnation becomes superfluous and ceases. Here we begin to see the real divine principle that guarantees all living beings a paradisiacal existence beyond terrestrial, physical life. If the living beings cannot remain in this paradise but have to be reborn again on the physical plane, it is due exclusively to the fact that their evolution is not finished and that they have not reached the height of life experience and creative ability that the Godhead has planned for them. By being reborn again on the physical plane, the beings have the opportunity to evolve further, make new mistakes, and experience the effects of these mistakes and the wisdom and corresponding great talents that arise from them. And in doing so, their behavior becomes correspondingly more perfect and thus qualifies them to experience a correspondingly even more perfect and more brilliant flood of light in the form of the experience of paradise. And in this way, living beings, through being reborn on the physical plane, continue to evolve towards greater and greater perfection, and attain a correspondingly more radiant existence in paradise after each terrestrial life. In so doing, the being ultimately manages to get through all the zones and spheres of unpleasant terrors and thereby reaches its present spiral cycle's culmination of wisdom and love. It cannot therefore learn any more on the physical plane in this cycle, so reincarnation or rebirth ceases. And thus, after this, the being continues with the entire capacity of its cosmic consciousness, in a divine revelation of the manifestation of love in wisdom and high intellectual creation in the radiant abundance of spiritual matter, a theme we will return to later. Through this creation, the details of the spiritual worlds are fashioned in sparkling and shining substances. In this golden matter, everything appears in a culmination of love, wisdom, beauty and joy. Here daily life is the revelation and experience of God's primary consciousness in its purest form. Chapter 34: Why all beings experience an individually adapted paradise, as the living beings on the physical plane are not equally far on in evolution and are thus on very different mental steps, and have very different abilities and talents. Their abilities to think and experience differ correspondingly and considerably. While all those beings who have gone through the epoch of reincarnation or rebirth, and have thereby come so far that they can experience true reality, the absolutely true solution to the mystery of life, and can therefore enjoy this reality's primary and absolute paradise, those beings who are still more or less unfinished cannot perceive the true paradise as a divine, culminating experience of light. They can therefore experience paradise only in accordance with what they perceive to be the highest and happiest ideal of life experience. Imagine how divine this world order is. If it were not precisely so, all beings would have to wait until they had passed through the entire dark part of the spiral cycle as far as the epoch of the Great Birth before they could have any experience whatsoever of a paradise or real existence of light. Life thus exists according to such divine laws that all living beings without exception attain an absolutely radiant experience of paradise between every physical terrestrial life. This holds absolutely true for people of all races, all nations, all followers of every religion and every religious sect, just as much as it does for people who have no belief whatsoever in any life after death. It thus holds true for people of all views of life. It holds true for so-called criminals and all those who commit suicide, as well as for saints. No being whatsoever can fail to have an experience of paradise between its physical terrestrial lives, since the wavelengths through which the ideas or mental constructions that collide with its view of a highest ideal or dream existence cannot be manifested on the spiritual plane. For this reason, mental short circuits cannot arise here, which means the kinds of thoughts that find vent in anger, bitterness, envy, jealousy, unhappy love, hatred and feelings of revenge, intolerance or the like. Such mental constructions or states of mind are of such a low wavelength range that they cannot possibly be manifested in any being's experience of paradise. This side of the being's psychic nature is put out of action through the experiences of purgatory. Chapter 35: Why paradise is a culminating experience of light, and purgatory is a culminating experience of darkness. True paradise, separated as it is from the physical terrestrial life, can thus be experienced here in its purest form only after the beings have passed through purgatory. After this passage, they can experience nothing but their fundamental ideas of an ideal existence and that of others from the same wavelength range. Likewise, they cannot see the microcosmic and macrocosmic details, things and ideas that are not on the same wavelength as their other ideal notions about paradise. For this reason, the spiritual heaven and earth, the spiritual climate, indeed, The entire spiritual experience of nature or of macrocosmic creations has the same wavelength range, the same luminous effect as the being's imagined paradise or dream existence or an atmosphere that fits 100% into it. The experience of paradise can thus be nothing but a culmination of the being's imagined dream existence. Because of this state, the beings in purgatory can experience only that part of the macrocosmic mental construction or those details or productions of nature that have the same dark and dismal wavelength range as their ideas of purgatory. But fortunately, the epoch of purgatory is such a concentrated and short-lived state that it can be described as but a kind of entrance or vestibule to the sphere of paradise. And, as previously mentioned, suffering occurs in this entrance only when the human being is in conflict with or creates a short circuit with its own ideal perception of the experience of life. Here, however, everyone is guaranteed help from guardian angels as soon as they feel unhappy and want help. Absolutely no being whatsoever, as also previously mentioned, will thus be deprived of its experience of paradise in the spiritual world between its physical terrestrial lives. Chapter 36. When the curses in the Bible turn out to be blessings for the human being, in reality people live according to the principle expressed in the Bible as the curse of the ground because of sin, where, among other things, God said to Adam, "Because you have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, just as God said to Eve, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children, your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." Here we do not need to explain in greater detail the overwhelming extent to which the fulfillment of this prophecy has controlled mankind in the past and has power over mankind in the present too. Sin, which means ignorance and mistakes in one's way of living and behaving, and the unpleasant or unfortunate effects that ensue from this, is, from a mental point of view, simply an element the human being swims in, as fish swim in water. That human beings hope and pray for a lighter and happier future, have dreams or ideas about an ideal existence that forms a contrast to their present dark and trouble-filled state of fate, is a matter of course. Throughout the world there is a prevalent hunger or longing for a contrast to the mental darkness, the mentally oppressive thought climate in which the strongest and the most clever exploit the weakest and less talented, and where a tolerable existence can sometimes be secured only through a deadly dangerous struggle with those in power who are inhumane and morally still very unfinished. It is thus absolutely natural that unfinished and therefore hard-pressed human beings have dreams about ideal existences in which they are freed from all the unfortunate phenomena that are detrimental to life or the curse of sin that the unfinished human being cannot be freed from on the physical plane. Since this biblical curse enables the human being to imagine a dream existence that becomes absolute reality on the spiritual plane every time it has passed through physical death, the curse here turns out to be a blessing. Chapter 37. The epoch of paradise as a divine revelation of caresses for the living being in its passage through the spiral cycle's culmination of darkness in accordance with universal love, which is the foundation for the continued existence of the whole universe. It would be glaringly unnatural if beings did not have the opportunity to experience the fulfillment of their dream existence or their hunger for an existence where they could undisturbedly enjoy the experience of life that was the very highest happiness and bliss for their present sensory capacity. We also see that no normal or natural hunger of any sort whatsoever for which there is no satiation can arise. We must of course disregard such artificially produced feelings of hunger as the hunger for drugs, alcohol, tobacco and the like. There is no satiation whatsoever for these kinds of hunger. The more beings consume these products, the more they will starve themselves to death, because the consumption of them can give them only an imagined satiation at the same time as they undermine the organism and thereby the ability to experience a normal life. But this is not the case with the longing or hunger for an ideal existence. It is 100% normal, and its satiation is therefore a corresponding vital necessity for the being's evolution or transformation into the human being in God's image, quite apart from it being a shining and warming revelation of caresses, by means of which the eternal Godhead embraces and encourages his unfinished Son, the living being, in the middle of his passage through the cosmic spiral cycles culminating zones of darkness, spheres of suffering and terrains of death. Chapter 38. The world where dreams are reality. The being's paradise or the sunny regions and home of life, since beings during their physical terrestrial lives live mostly in a world of darkness and must struggle with many difficult phenomena in order to be able to sustain their physical existence. This, as previously mentioned, gives rise to dreams of ideal existences in which they do not have to struggle with sufferings and difficulties, as they have to on the physical plane. These dreams are mental constructions in spiritual matter and cannot, as a rule, be experienced by the beings on the physical plane for the time being, because they are not yet sufficiently developed to be able to meet the conditions for the realization of these dreams or dream existences on this plane. Here we see how divinely the universe's laws of life are formed in culminating wisdom and love, since the beings are granted intervals for rest during their connection to physical existence, so that during these intervals, they can be completely exempted from the difficulties, sufferings, worries and unrest of their physical fate, so that they can devote themselves entirely to their dreams, and experience them as realistic reality on the spiritual plane, regardless of which step in evolution, which gifts and talents, what degree of logical thinking and creative ability they may have attained on the physical plane. Their dreams can be fashioned only out of the wishes and longings that constitute the absolute height of what they are able to think or perceive on the particular step in evolution they represent. But, as a rule, having such a dream or dream existence realized on the physical plane implies insurmountable obstacles for the beings in question, since physical matter does not automatically obey thought. It therefore most often costs both money and other people's cooperation or labor to have one's dream existence realized. This is why people live with unsatisfied longings and the disappointments, worries and difficulties these engender, making their fate or physical existence an unhappy one. Having their dream existence realized on the physical plane can therefore take a very long time. Such a long time, in fact, that several lives are sometimes needed before the obstacles are overcome and the being can experience physically the realization of its dream existence. But this being so, it is divine that people can experience their dream existence on the spiritual plane long before they can experience it on the physical plane. And this is what happens when the being dies, leaving its physical existence, and is liberated from its physical organism. After this, it is relieved of having to juggle with heavy physical matter, which was previously a vital necessity. It will now experience and create only in spiritual matter, which on the contrary obeys thought. Here the being can therefore experience everything it is able to imagine on the step to which it belongs. And since it has been freed in purgatory from that part of its set of senses through which disappointments, sorrows, anxieties, jealousy, depression, bitterness and anger, or, in brief, all low spirits or bad temperedness can be experienced, It can experience only joy or elation on the spiritual plane, since everything here succeeds for it according to its slightest wish.